What's up, 12s? I'm AB Hasselbeck, and this is the Seahawks Collective Show presented by Hawk Media. We've got Brian Nemhauser, Hawk blogger, Michael Sean Dugar, covering the Hawks for The Athletic. And our guy, Rob Satan, is not on us with us tonight. He is headed back to the UK. So, Rob, if you're on Wi-Fi on the flight, hope it's going well. Hope you're tuning in. Not sure where you're flying over right now. But, Brian, you mentioned off-air that you actually had the opportunity to meet him in person or see him in person.
Yeah. Rob, came out, saw him with some folks Friday night. And the surprise for me was that guy is like 6'2" or so. I would have never guessed. And this is funny. I've got all these folks I've met through the years online, which sounds terrible, but it's actually been kind of cool. And when you meet him in person, the height is always the thing that you can never know until you meet him. So that was fun with Rob.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, we'll get to it because we have a packed show tonight. We'll wrap up some thoughts from the Hawks game against the 49ers, get into what to expect against this upcoming Steelers game, everyone's favorite Seahawks team to play. But don't forget to drop any questions you guys have for these guys, and we'll do our best to get to them. But wild first week in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers taking it to the Jets. Daniel Jones looking like Indiana Jones, balling out there for the Colts in the cornfields. Micah Parsons having his debut in a Packers uniform. And Monday night, 3-point win, J.J. McCarthy's debut as a Viking. We'll do a full recap of the Seahawks game, but just week one, game around the league. Which game around the league intrigued you guys most, Mike?
I think probably the one that's just, I'm not saying this because it's on the back of my, or on my TV right now behind me, but that Buffalo.
He's locked in, Baltimore, you guys.
Well, I just couldn't find the remote. I found it now, but we went live. Anyway, I'll turn it off in a sec. I thought that was like a fascinating just game. And it really just shows on a number of levels, like, what contenders really can look like. I guess not their defenses. I don't know why the Buffalo is rolling out those safeties, but like that was some high level football in a different way. There's some high level football where the games are low scoring. I think we saw some of those around the league as well, but I thought that game was super, super intriguing. At that, both quarterbacks played out of their minds. There was some game management stuff in there. It was really cool. It was just some high level stuff with the exception of like some of the DB play. The bad DB play irks me. So I guess that game stood out for me in a negative way too. But that was probably my favorite game I watched. That wasn't the Seahawks this week.
I mean, that might be the best game all season. I mean, it's going to be tough to top how good that game was. I think that's pretty much the right answer. Everything else would finish second place. I thought that the Eagles-Cowboys game we've already talked about, but I thought that was a very informative game, and we already saw the Eagles making moves to kind of complement their pass rush with Za'Darius Smith. We talked about that already. But so with that all aside, I guess the one I'd throw out is the game from last night with the Bears and the Vikings. I got to admit, I was one of the people out there saying, you know what, like J.J. McCarthy, that's not looking good. And I was a freezing cold take no more than like a half an hour later. And I saw a lot of other people that are way smarter than me having the same experience. So good on him, good on the Vikings. And I think it's one that has a sneaky big implication for the Seahawks and the division, because the 49ers get the Bears, Seahawks get the Vikings. And it's kind of like, well, it's looking like the Bears are the better team. And then it looked very quickly like that was not the case. So that Bears team and franchise seems as combustible as just about any out there with what's going on over there.
You know what that game also was, Brian, in a good way, and it might tie into what we're about to talk about with the Seahawks game. It was what the benefit of like a high level play caller can do for your offense. Because in that fourth quarter, the reason you tweeted that JJ looked buns, because he did look like that in the first like three quarters of that game. And in the fourth quarter, man, Kevin O'Connell was dialing it up. And it was just every throw JJ had was just so easy. And I was texting some of my homies. I was like, this is it. Like, I think that Kevin and Brian, the OC over there in the DC, Brian Flores, that's like a top three OC DC combo to me. I think I'm high on Saleh and Shanahan, which we'll get to. The Seahawks has dealt with, and I'd say probably Andy Reid and Spags is probably up there as well. But you can just see what those two headsets do for their teams week in and week out. It's really, really, really impressive.
Yeah, that was the game for me that caught my eye the most. I think just, you know, the unknown, right? How JJ McCarthy was going to be. And Brian, I don't think you were alone. Like, a lot of people on Twitter were saying the same thing. So it wasn't just you, but how cool for him to be able to have that game, you know, hometown kid, wild comeback. And he scored like 3 unanswered touchdowns, just exciting. And I think that was what was fun, is like, football is back. It's fun to watch. It's entertaining. You're going to stay up late to do it. But let's switch over to the Seahawks, who started week one losing 17-13 against the 49ers. It's now Tuesday night. You guys have had a couple days to process the game and get your takeaways. But what were your main takeaways just from this home opener?
Mike, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll start. I'll try to keep it semi-brief. You know, I think I treat the first game, and maybe even the first two games, depending on if they're home and road. You know, I try to measure both first-time outings in those situations pretty differently. I view them as like how I view rookies. So, like, when I'm looking at rookies, I want you to look how you looked in college. Like, whatever you were, what made you attractive to get drafted, be that. Like, if you were a fast guy, be the fast guy. If you were like a super good run stopper, just be that. Evolve into the other stuff that gets into your upside eventually. But just like whatever the thing you do, I just want to see that, you know, good hands, good route running, very tough, whatever it is, right? So I generally treat openers kind of like that as well. It's like, okay, be as you were advertised to be. That's headsets, that's veteran acquisitions, that's just everything. That's the head coach, whatever. Everybody, just be as what you were supposed to look like. If you surprise me in a good way with something else that suggests some upside, that's great. But I just, as a baseline, I'm like, all right, just be what you're supposed to be. So on the defensive side, I thought that was very encouraging, like for like 58 minutes or something like that. Like, it was, this is exactly what it's supposed to look like. Getting pressure from multiple positions. Let's see, stopping the run on early downs. Mike McDonald was really like, they just did a lot of the stuff I expected, getting the ball. They tackled generally pretty well. Outside of like 2 McCaffrey plays, they were just as advertised. And I watched the film before we just did this show. It backed that up. Very encouraged there. And it was like almost a complete opposite on the offensive side. I was just like, I had high hopes. I thought they would score more points. But just in general, just aesthetically, schematically, I was like, this is not what you guys told us you would be. And that's just, I just don't know how you get to that space as an offense. Is like, you spend months and months and months telling, I flew all over the country for them to tell me how the offense is going to look. West Palm, Indianapolis, like, and tell me how the offense is going to look. And then you get there and it looks very grubby. They even ran a play that I saw Grubb install, the tunnel screen to the hook and ladder. They used that in Detroit last year, I believe, on like 3rd and a mile. So I'm like, yo, is Kubiak Grubb with hair? Like, what's going on? It just felt very, it felt like regression a little bit. It just, nothing else, it just
that's
didn't feel like they were
week.
As advertised.
That's the quote of the week.
thank you. I just didn't, yeah, it was very frustrating to watch live, and then the tape was almost even worse. So that was kind of my first reaction, yes, on the game day, and then upon rewatching the tape.
Yeah. I think Mike and I are going to sound alike. So I won't reiterate every point he just made, but If you just isolated and all you knew was the defensive side of this, and you saw that the 49ers once again scored 17 points, Brock Purdy had a couple of picks. He had the highest pressure rate against him in his career. The Seahawks lead the NFL in pressure rate after a week. Like, when they blitzed, they had an 83% pressure rate, which is insane. Like, all these things were pretty positive. So that you'd say, okay, well, McDonald actually is looking like he can match up against the great play callers in this division. And then the other side, number one point was they lost by not being themselves and not being who they said they were going to be, which I think contributes to why Mike McDonald was, to use his words, edgy this week when we were talking to him. I don't think that's the kind of team they want to be. One play action pass attempt, under 40% under center. They just weren't the team that Mike and I have seen every snap at practice since OTAs. The amount of under center play action that we see in bootlegs and rollouts, and there was like none of that, was just like, what? But I will say this, the thing that I was most wrong about, and I will gladly always tell you guys what I got completely wrong. What I got completely wrong was I thought the 49ers run defense especially was going to be vulnerable. They just have some jags in the middle of that line. And one, Khalil Davis played, I think, a much better game than I gave him credit for being able to play. to Robert Saleh, to Mike's point, like he balled out. He outcoached Clint Kubiak in that game. And I think that's the number one reason, in addition to obviously the Reek stuff that we'll talk about, that it ended up the way it did. And the last thing I'll say is games generally get decided by elite players making elite plays in the big moments, the leverage moments. And my question has been for years about this Seahawks team, who are those guys? Who are the blue chip players that make those plays that are improbable in those big moments? And that showed up again. I mean, you should not be beaten by Jake Tongis or Tongis or whatever I pronounce his last name. You should not be beat by that. You should not be beat by Ricky Pearsall on a play where you had him well covered. Like, these were things that just shouldn't have happened. And you shouldn't be, you know, fumbling the ball when you're going in for what should have been at least, you know, a chance to win the game. So that was kind of my high level takeaway.
I was right there with you. I think more so on that, the last part that you were talking about, just for me, like watching all of the week one games, you didn't see a championship level execution at the end of the game like you did other teams with the Seahawks. You saw with the Bills, you saw with the Vikings last night, you saw with the Steelers come through, like winning the game at the end there. There takes a certain level of player and mentality and just reps with each other in order to execute in those moments of truth. And can you make the magic happen? And, you know, some teams can pull it out in week one and other teams, it might take longer in the season. So I think for me, that was disappointing. And that was kind of the big takeaway, is that there were teams that got it done in the end of the game and had those, how did they do it moments, and the Seahawks just didn't. But a lot of people are going to focus on the fumble at the end of the game. You know, Seahawks are 9 yards away from getting a game winning touchdown and they have the fumble, but it takes more than just obviously one play. You got to be put in that position. So if not that one specific play, what was the play that you guys feel maybe cost the Seahawks this game?
Hold on. I need time to think. Brian, what you got?
I'll give you a non-standard answer, because the obvious stuff is the Reek plays, Reek Woolen plays. And that's, I'm sure we're going to talk about Reek Woolen, what's going on there. And I actually think Mike and I are going to see this similarly, but I'm curious. Is that the JSN fumble? I think that was a sneaky big play. When I was rewatching the game, Seahawks had blocked a field goal. They had really kind of retaken like momentum in that game. They already had the lead. They were driving towards taking a larger lead, and I thought that fumble changed the complexion of the game. And the 49ers kind of were the better team from that point forward.
And they scored on that, I believe, on that drive. I think the Niners mm-hmm. did. I think they went and tied the game. I remember because someone, and I won't say who, but someone who works for the team when I was in the locker room, it was like, hey, Mike, did they score after Jack's fumble? And I was like, I'm not sure. I just legitimately didn't remember. And I went back and I was like, oh, yeah, they did when tied the game. I will say, so, yeah, Reek, obviously. But additionally, I'd probably say about 1B to the 1A in the XC. The Reek play, the Reek touchdown, and then the fumble by Sam was obvious. And then after that, I would say kicking it on 4th and 1. You know, I'm like captain of hashtag never kick. Right? I just don't like kicking in general. But I understand that sometimes it's just a necessary evil. You know, you got to do it. But when you can avoid it, and particularly if you got a chance to really like establish your identity, whatever it is, and you can use like 4th downs to do that, you know, I like it. That's why I'm a big Dan Campbell guy, because that's their attitude, you know, that's their mentality. And they just go about it differently than like a Eagles team who they just kind of found a cheat code for their going for it. You know, I don't care how you do it, but you can just see it. The Commanders actually too, they have a different way of being like an aggressive, you know, team with their identity and going for it. And I thought that was the perfect time for Mike to do that. I think it was 4th and 1 on the 19. With about 3:30 left, and they went and kicked it, took the lead. And I get it. The defense had only given up, I believe, 10 points to that point, but knowing how long they had been on the field, how you needed some like really fortuitous things to happen to make sure it was only 10 points, you know, a doinked field goal, a blocked field goal. Those are not like usually sustainable things and don't necessarily speak to how well your defense has played. Cause in both cases, the other team was in field goal range. Right. So I thought, I didn't like it in real time. I think I tweeted it. I was like, go for it, Mike. Also,
He's not tricking Twitter, though. I'll tell you that.
maybe he should. Or whoever he has, I think Brian Ayers might be his guy in the headset. Like, yeah, maybe he should be on Twitter taking advice. But I thought the other thing that was disappointing about that, beyond the fact that I just hate kicking, is that in the preseason, they wasted the time showing us a Jalen Milroe tush push, whatever. You installed it, you used it, you tested it out, it worked. Then you have an AJ Barner tush push as well. I'm like, okay, cool. This is great, like experiments for maybe in a high leverage situation. You already have a rep at these plays. You don't use either one of those on fourth and about a yard and some change. I just didn't see it there. This is before anything happened with Reek, before any fumble. Like in real time, I was like, this is the run, the tough smash mouth ground and pound team that has these tush push variations as well, is just going to kick it on fourth and one. I just didn't like that. I thought that was very consequential. It felt like it in real time, and then it kind of turned out to be.
I have to just jump in because I've been a little surprised how much attention that play call has gotten. I feel completely differently than Mike and a lot of other people about that play call. Not that I think that they absolutely should have kicked. I thought it was a 50-50. And the fact of the matter was, I would agree with what Mike said, is it was a chance to establish an identity and tell the team, we're going to be a team that gets short yardage. And in fact, they were 2 for 2 on, you know, third or fourth and one plays up until that point during the game. But they've been pretty ineffective running the ball, and they'd also lost yards on a 3rd and 2. And ultimately, it was proved to be the right decision in the fact that the 49ers were going to kick a field goal if they did not complete that play to the tight end for the touchdown. They were not in a go-for-it range. The Seahawks would have gotten the ball back with the game tied. I don't feel like there's enough evidence to say, man, this was a really bad choice. A lot of people see it the way Mike did. I was just surprised by that because I think it was a pretty defensible decision. And my biggest criticism was, you know, that was an identity moment. You passed on it. You got to be careful about that, especially early in the year.
You know what else stood out too? The identity thing really bothers me too, because I'm like, why do you have Jalen Milroe tush pushes in the plan? I'm just like, you use it if that's going to be it. I'm kind of the Jalen Milroe thing, I'm not a big fan of anyway. So that especially irks me. But also Mike McDonald's explanation for it, which I believe he said on the radio, he was just like, our model said go. And then he details all of this reasoning that in theory should be in the model. He was like, yeah, like whether they'd be in 4-down mode after, like as in they would go for it on 4th downs, the time, the percentages of like scoring when they're in a 4-down mode versus not. Like he went through all these things. And on one hand, I appreciate the coach giving us the methodology. That's great, you know, because there are some coaches. I think the Titans coach gave some like super mean answer to the media there in a similar situation, I believe. Whereas Mike was like, here's exactly why I'm thinking this. And I was reading, I'm typing out the quote back. I'm like, ain't this all in the model? Like this is, all of this is taken into your model and your model still said go. It was just kind of funky. I was like, it felt unnecessarily conservative. And it, in real time, it felt that way. And then to hear him say that their own in-house model was like, oh, we should go for it. I was like, it just felt bad. Again, it felt bad in real time, aside from me being a never kick guy. Like I'm a never kick guy as is, but that felt time was like all the time you take into designing an AJ Barner tush push and using it in, I think, the first half, and then be like, oh, we need a yard. J-Mai, come on down. Like, what are we doing, man? And you drafted a fullback. Go get a yard.
Hey, you got to wonder that the no use of the run game and maybe the tush push plays and all those things that you guys mentioned, like maybe it's just a week one. Hey, we're just going to throw something totally different at you. I don't know, but I do want to get to all those things, tush push, Reek, all those conversations. But first, we have to tell you guys about our sponsor for the season. We mentioned it last week. We're super excited about it. So check this out.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Call your shot on Sleeper. All right. Well, the Sleeper app for your season-long fantasy leagues, the app offers live stats, real-time updates on your favorite players and teams, and a real-time chat where you can engage with others about the NFL and NBA games that you guys are all watching. So download the number one sports app today. Use promo code HMA and you'll get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. CC Sleepers terms of use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. We are pumped to have them with us for the Seahawks collective and two Seahawks on defense that I know you guys wanted to get to. Let's start with Rick Woolen. We were talking about him earlier. He had that spotlight play that went the 49ers way, the tight end who had his first NFL catch. Okay. But just what are your thoughts on Woolen's role come week two, Brian?
Yeah. So here's like, Rick Woolen is one of those guys that is like public enemy number one for Seahawks fans. Like people just love to, I mean, he's had some high leverage bad plays, and he's also been benched by two different coaches in different years. And then he had trouble with run defense. And like, generally speaking, I think a lot of people are out. I got a lot of messages from people. Like even when I was walking out of the stadium, someone was wearing a Woolen jersey and another fan was like, never wear that to the stadium again. Like people are really down. I'm not there. Like I understand the frustration. The guy absolutely misplayed two passes in the air that you could say decided this football game. At the same time, I still don't think people fully understand how big of a talent gap there is between him and most corners in this league. And I don't think it's going to be simple to just insert someone else in there. And then, yeah, maybe they're more competitive on those plays, but maybe they're also giving up like 80 yards the rest of the game and you're frustrated. I mean, people need to remember Quentin Dunbar. People need to remember Kelly Jennings, and people need to remember all the other corners that have played and been incredibly bad at the position or frustrating to watch. Rick Woolen generally is one of the best cover corners in football, and he's essentially the only athlete like of his type in the league, especially at that position. I think that there's things to be figured out, but this team will only be its best if Rick Woolen is playing his best. You can substitute him, but I don't think you're going to be as good of a team for doing it. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, in a little bit, like Mike McDonald's hinting at that. I'm really curious about how that might play out.
Yeah, there was a, I forget which agent I was talking to 1 year, but it wasn't a Seahawk player's agent. He had a Seahawk, but for this particular discussion, we were talking about a different DB that he had. And he was showing me, he actually showed me the Excel sheet breakdown that he had that he was going to go negotiate with the team to get his guy an extension. And it was his guy's numbers against like the best of the best. I forget who it was at that time, but like Devontae Adams. Anyway, just name the best five receivers from 5 years ago. And it probably applies, right? So I always thought that was interesting and it stuck with me. And that DB did end up getting paid, by the way. So it was effective in some regard. And I think about that with Reek, and the way it applies to him is like, you look at Reek's best plays of his career against the best dudes, and they are just so solid. Like it is so like his tape against like Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. Some of his CD stuff is a little shaky, but then like some of the good route runners like Brandon Ayuk, bigger guys like Drake London and Mike Evans. Like he's got just great plays against all these guys. He picked off Stafford last year here on a go ball to Puka too. Like you include Puka in that list. The problem is, and this is where I can understand why fans are so frustrated, because I imagine the coaching staff is too. Mm-hmm. You know what the Seahawks would counter with if his agent walked in there with an Excel sheet with all the numbers in the film with the guys I just had, is they would say, now look at this play against DeMarcus Robinson. Look at this play against a guy whose last name, Jake Tonjes, we may not even know if that is his last name. Look at this play against Keon Coleman or whoever, Zach Ertz, you know, like these are other guys that he's given up touchdowns to. And it's like, you can't just be good against the good guys because that's not all we play. We need snap to snap consistency, particularly at that position. And that's where it's like the leash should only be so long, I guess, in that regard. I do think he's much, much better than everyone else when he's locked in. But like that is one hell of a caveat. Even as, I'm a big Reek guy. I just think I'm with Brian. Like you don't make those. You know what I mean? Like you just don't make them. Very similar to DK's and AJ Brown's, like, guys that big who can run that fast, you just don't remake those, right? But at the same time, I got to be able to trust guard DeMarcus Robinson. I got to be able to trust you to guard whoever, insert non-elite guy. And if you can't, if the coaching staff gets to the point where like, oh, we can't, then it's, then I really don't know what you do, especially now that Nicky Minwori's hurt and you kind of can't go big nickel more full time. Like, you just don't have the bodies unless you really love Ty Okada. And I don't think anybody does unless their last name's Okada. So it is very, very, very tricky. I don't really know what I would do if I was Mike, because Mike McDonald, that is, obviously I am Mike. But it's like when you
the
when
fact you're, that I didn't pick that up, I don't know, Brian, I didn't see your reaction, but I was nope. Like, yeah, you're not Mike.
it's really a challenge, because I've watched Reek on tape play games really, really well. I've watched him play that particular ball against Pearsall really well. Again, yeah. The Puka goal ball. He picked off Kyler on a Hollywood Brown goal ball his rookie year. Same thing, same play. So I think that if I had to guess on the whole, Mike McDonald would be like, he's a sample size process guy, so he won't overreact to those plays. He even mentioned to us on Monday, he was like, I've seen Reek make big plays. He mentioned the goal ball I just mentioned. He picked off Caleb, I believe, to end the Bears game. He was on Garrett Wilson on the 4th and a million in the Jets game, that the final play of that. Like, he can clearly cover also in crunch time too. It's not like he's just only good for the first 75% of the game either, but it has to be just so frustrating to be like, dog, that's Jake Tonjes. Maybe that's his name. We don't know. But like that's a killer. That would eat at me as a coach.
You know what, AB, it reminds me a little bit of something, you know. Your dad played for Mike Holmgren, as you know, and there was a player, the first jersey I ever bought was Amon Green, running back, super talented, incredibly fast, but he fumbled the football. And Mike Holmgren was like, dude, I'm not going to put up with that. You're out. He traded him to Green Bay. He goes on to be a Pro Bowl, you know, incredibly productive running back, but he did things that the coach just, like, at least in Seattle, was not willing to tolerate. And I do get that vibe from Mike McDonald. He's like, if Reek Woolen just makes one of those two plays, the other guys that like poured their hearts and souls into this game and held that team down would have come out with a win. And so I do get the impression the coach is not particularly tolerant of seeing more of those mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. Outwardly, McDonald seemed to have a lot of belief in him, right? And I think a lot of it has to do too with how is the player coming to practice every day, right? Like, how is he practicing every day? But I was impressed with, you know, that was a spotlight moment, and I was impressed with how he handled it for Reek and saying, you know, like you said, Mike, you know, mentioning other plays that he's made in the past and how, you know, maybe 9 out of 10 times he'd come up with that. But yeah, definitely an interesting situation, and we'll see how it plays out. But definitely a fun guy. He was one of the biggest personalities that I met when I was working with the Seahawks, and definitely liked being around him. But let's move on to Tyrese Knight, a guy who missed a lot of time.
Can I say something real quick before we move to Tyrese?
Yeah.
It's one thing on Reek that just reminded me of something while you were talking. I do think that I don't care whether guys don't speak after games, whether it's a win or a loss. I generally don't care. You know, I got a deadline. I just want to talk to who does want to talk. But it did stand out to me on Sunday that, like, Abe gave up the block, you know, got beat. That ended up being the game-ending fumble. Jackson had a fumble that really hurt his team. And both of those guys were willing to sit at their locker, very upset, and discuss it, you know. And then, Reek was one of the guys who declined to talk to the media, at least me. I don't know if anybody else later talked to him. But, you know, and again, that's their prerogative. But, like, I just think he would, to Brian's point about him being public enemy number one, I do think some, like, public accountability would help. You know, like, you're not going to say anything revelatory. You're just going to say, I got to play the ball better. That's fine. Sometimes that just really is enough. You know, like Abe said, I got to be better. You know, when he got beat by Bosa on the game ender, it just, I feel like that little stuff can go a long way. Like, no one wants to talk after losses, but that's part of the job and part of being a professional.
That's probably one of the worst parts of your job too, is having to go into a losing locker room. I know my first experience with that was not fun, right? It's not fun, but you got to do it. You got to do it for the people, right? Everybody's got to know what happened. But let's get to Tyrese Knight. He missed a lot of time because of a knee. Seahawks mixed in linebacker Drake Thomas throughout the game. And when McDonald was asked about Knight's workload in this past game, he just said that there's a good competition really going on at linebacker. And I think sometimes coaches use the word competition to mean different things in different ways. But Brian, what did you make of this?
Yeah, I took it for both Reek, where Mike McDonald spoke. He was defending Reek, but he spent a lot of time talking about Josh Job. And he even corrected the reporter who was saying how well Josh Job played. And was like, yeah, he also had a pick. he really was complimentary. I think in that and the fact that the way he talked about Drake Thomas versus Tyrese Knight, there were some real similarities. It kind of reminds me a little bit of last year when we were told that Satavala Mayo was competing with Christian Haynes for the starting guard spot. But it sounded like the decision was already made that it was going to be Laumea. I think we're going to see Josh Job be the second corner this week and Reek Woolen be, the third corner who comes in when Witherspoon plays nickel. And I think with the Tyrese, and I think it's a little bit harder to say. I think Mike McDonald may give him the benefit of the doubt that he's still coming back from injury, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 50-50 rep split at that position, because Drake Thomas has earned Mike McDonald's praise, and I can't exactly say why, but I can say that this guy made the team after like barely practicing last year in training camp, made the 53 over Patty O'Connell this year, and Mike McDonald's only had positive things to say. And then I think he did play a better game than Tyrese Knight this week, so I'll give him that. But that's the direction I think it's headed, and I'm a little bit surprised because I thought Tyrese Knight was a pretty good player for this team last year, and there's a lot of reason to think he would be better this year. So I chalked up his struggles in this first game to just not quite in game shape yet and his recovery, but maybe there's more to it.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, because it's not like neither linebacker jumps off the screen to me, really, neither being Tyrese or Drake, really. And he did this a little bit last year, too. I think in the Dolphins game, I want to say, like, Mike was, platooning the weak side linebacker spot, which I'm just not a fan of. Like, it gets a little wonky there. I do think that they went into the plan for week one wanting to kind of platoon that spot, in part because Tyrese had just missed so much time as well. And then Drake kind of took advantage of some opportunities there. Like I said earlier, both teams played really well, tackled really well. Wasn't a lot of missed tackles. There were some, I think there was like two by Tyrese, or at least one where Kobe ends up making a tackle in the alley. So, I mean, if you're, and Brian knows this from talking to Mike, like we have been for the last like year and some change, he's really hard on the inside backers. So if he likes you, you're doing something right. Even if we can't see, you're just doing something right. And if you're not on it, he's not afraid to call it out, particularly at that spot. And then we saw it last year, and just what he's willing to do, he and Snyder are willing to do. Like, dude, he got Jerome Baker out of there, got Tyrell Dobson out of there, or Tyrell Dotson out of there. So I'm willing to take Mike's word for it. Obviously, he knows more than I do about why Drake has earned it. But either way, I just think that that's a position where I want both guys on the field 100% of the snaps, meaning Ernest and whoever plays next to him. I don't think it really helps the defense that much to be rotating. So whoever it is, I just think they need to get that settled and roll with a guy. You know, very similar to like last year, they were doing the right guard thing in game. That was terrible. It was a terrible idea. So I don't think they should continue doing that with inside backer either. Either play Tyrese or play Drake.
Well, Knight joined Seattle Sports tonight, and I got to listen to a little bit of it. And he did talk just about coming back. He said, just moving on the field for a full month, after a full month, just getting his legs back under him. They asked him how he was feeling after a game. He's like, yeah, I feel like I did play a game yesterday. Like, I'm sore head to toe, right? And you're going to be sore head to toe regardless of whether or not you've missed time. But I think that is significant in just thinking about, how coaches split up time between players that are, getting ramped back up. But just get to some injuries with the Seahawks and in the division that stood out. Rookie safety Nick Amanwari had the high ankle sprain. And, right after the game, I think McDonald thought it wasn't as bad as it actually was. But now we're a little concerned. He said that they would consider putting him on IR. So just shocking a little bit. You know, you're bummed that you weren't able to see him. But from what you guys did see of him in the game, I know it was very little. What were some of your takes?
I don't know how many snaps it was. It was very brief, but it like sucks
six,
that he
six or seven.
Yeah, it happened very quickly. It was unfortunate too because he got hurt making a really good play. Too, there was some really good like run defense
That's the best
by both
way
teams.
To get hurt. That's the best way to get hurt. If you got to do
well,
it,
he didn't even get hurt making the play. AB, he got hurt because someone like landed, like touched his hand to his ankle.
It's even worse. That's like when you get in when you slip or fall, you got to like make a ball. Like I got in a fight. Like you should have seen the other person.
Yeah, it really, really unfortunate. I think on top, he was fine in the few plays I saw. What really sucks though is that they just don't make those. They have to change the whole thing. And he was kind of their cheat code is strong, but whatever the next tier behind cheat code schematically, because you kind of look at it, like look how the Niners are playing the Seahawks. When Robbie Utes was on the field, the Niners were like, let's put our big boys out there. Right? And the Seahawks tried to take advantage of that. You saw it actually in literally the first play. They put Robbie out there. The Niners matched with heavy personnel, and they spread it out and found Jackson wide open in the middle of the field for like 18 yards. You can schematically do that stuff because teams don't usually have a 6'3", 225-pound DB who can also effectively play linebacker and who can cover, right? You know, they usually just put a linebacker out there so you can kind of toy with them a little bit, particularly if your fullback and your running back can catch. So Nick allowed them to match teams' heavy offense with a lighter defense but still be able to cover. It was like a really good – it's the same thing that the Lions kind of do with Brian Branch. You see the Ravens do it with Kyle Hamilton. Like it really were even see this, the Cardinals do it a little bit with Buddha when they have healthy bodies at DB. Like it works really, really, really well and allows you to highlight that guy and get him around the ball and still stop the run. Cause every defensive coordinator is afraid of getting fired if they don't stop the run. So it sucks. Cause that was a big part of their plan. That's why they trade up for this guy in the second round and use him and barely use him in the preseason to preserve him for this. And then boom, that just really sucked. Cause they don't have a replacement. It's not Ty. It's not even really Spoon. Spoon's different. You know, Spoon's what, 20 something pounds lighter than Nick. Like that does matter. So it sucks. Cause Nick, like the best play he made all day gets hurt on. I feel really bad for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I will just concur with everything Mike said and reiterate. Not only do I think that he was a huge part of the game plan for the 49ers, everything that we've seen indicates he's a pretty big part of the game plan every week, and they don't have anyone else. So I think this means you're going to see a lot more nickel, not as much big nickel, not as much three safety. I think it's going to mean Josh Jobe, whether or not he takes over for Reek as the starting, you know, base corner. He's going to play more snaps one way or another than he was probably going to. And if he plays the way he played on, you know, Sunday, then that's not the worst thing in the world because he was one of the best defensive players on the field. But there were times last year where he was far from that. And so we'll just have to see over the course of time how that works out, because I think Mike McDonald really does want to play big nickel. And you can bring up DeAnthony Bell. Yes, he can play in the box. He's not Nick Emenwori. Like, he's just not. And we already talked about Ty Okada, who's definitely not. Jarek Reed, I like as a safety, but he's not a big – like, they just don't have – you know, you could maybe put a couple guys deep and have Julian Love play that role. But even him, like, I just don't – I think that weakens you at another position. So, yeah, I think it's a sneaky big loss. At the same time, he's a rookie, and we have no idea over the course of a game if he was going to be the reason the team lost anyway. Like, he could have made his own. He had a coverage bust against the Chiefs, you know? So, like, I'm not going to use it as an excuse. I know the team's not, but I do think it's a pretty big loss in terms of who they were planning to lean on.
You know, yeah, you know what that – sorry to cut you out, AB, but that reminded me of something. Can't remember if I've talked about this on here, but I'm slowly becoming – actually, the Green Bay game in the playoffs kind of radicalized me in this way. But now I've like been able to put words to it. On defense, I'm really starting to become like a you're only as good as your 11th guy type of person. And we saw, honestly, this game just showed us that, to be honest. 10 guys can do their job. One dude misplays the ball, the game's over. Right. And then I think that's important because the Nick one, I wouldn't even call it a sneaky loss because now it changes who your 11th guy is. You know, we just talked about Drake Thomas and Tyrese. I thought that, like, that position would be the like 11th guy from like a talent standpoint. Now it may be if they do like, okay, Kobe, you've played nickel before. Now come on down and we'll start putting Ty back there deeper or something like that. That's a terrible idea, but you could throw it out there in practice and see what sticks. But that would then change who your 11th guy is. And it matters because these OCs are pretty smart. Like, and they got these guys up there in the booth too. You know, I'm almost guaranteed that if the Niners audio leaked from the headsets, when Ty Okada came in the game, they were like, yo, alert, 39's in there, you know, like, and what do you know? Touchdown right to him. You know, that's not an accident. There's guys up. Canales used to be one of those guys for the Seahawks to like point stuff like that out. So it's tough, man. Cause when you're, if your 11th guy ain't on it, you could have 10 all pros. You really can. You could have 10 guys all do the right thing, coverage, technique, leverage, whatever. And then that 11th guy doesn't fit his gap, doesn't do whatever it. Yeah. It looks a lot like Brian mentioned some guys, you know, Kerry Williams, I'd add to that list, Trey Flowers. They've had Tedrick Thompson's, like, they just have some bad DBs play some ball out here, play meaningful ball too. You know, Lano Hills, you know, because it's the 11th dude. If you're 11th, Ugo is who radicalized me in the Green Bay game. If your 11th guy ain't on it, that's tough. And Nick made, he was a really good 10th or 11th dude, you know, and now he's not in the lineup.
Well, you can just hear how much that is impacting the Seahawks and, you know, just how injuries can really impact a game plan. But some other notable injuries, really specifically, not just for the division, but for the 49ers, took a beating. George Kittle is on the IR today with a hammy. He'll miss 4 games. Brock Purdy has a shoulder and a toe injury that could make him uncertain for week 2 against New Orleans. So we'll see how that shakes out, but not good for the 49ers. Injuries were a huge problem for them last year. So we'll see how that goes, but let's move on because we got a big game. Let's preview week 2 because the Seahawks head to the beautiful city of Pittsburgh to face DK Metcalf and Aaron Rodgers. The Steelers coming off a really impressive win against the Jets. Aaron Rodgers showing that he still got it. They have a clutch kicker and TJ Watt's defense is scratching and itching for a stronger performance. So Brian, how do the Seahawks rebound and win this game?
You know, it's interesting because Aaron Rodgers is going to get all this praise, and I think somewhat deservedly so. You know, you throw 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's a good game. Of course, one of those touchdown passes was a pop pass from 2 yards where he just pushed it forward and the guy ran in. So let's call it 3 touchdown passes, but still pretty good. For as much as we've kind of hounded Clint Kubiak for, you know what, you didn't really lose to your identity. And part of that was a lot of these quick passes. Over half the passes that Sam Darnold threw on Sunday were under 2.5 seconds. You're talking screens. You're talking about like these just super quick. And the Seahawks were literally the worst team in football on those plays. Conversely, Aaron Rodgers had a lot of those plays as well, but they worked. They screened to DK. He broke a bunch. Like he ran, you know, did yards after catch. I mean, I think Seahawks fans, if they watched DK in that game, there were some plays where it was like, we've been asking for that for years. Where was that? Where DK was put in a position to use his speed and strength to run after the catch. And I think Arthur Smith did a good job and Aaron Rodgers did a good job of identifying some of those opportunities. So their quick game was top 8 in terms of EPA per play in week 1. And I think that was a big part of how they ended up on top. At the same time, if you had told me that the Steelers were going to be soft in the middle on defense and be questionable in coverage, Darius Slay was going to look, you know, maybe cooked a little bit. The safety play, you know, I would have thought you were crazy, especially against the Jets. But Breece Hall, this wasn't just a Justin Fields read option type of thing. The Jets were creating gaps and not in a gap scheme kind of way, zone runs, but they were creating gaps and creases against the Steelers all day. And they were doing it all running away from TJ Watt and running toward Cam Hayward, who did not have a great game after, you know, asking for some more money, which he deserves. And so, yeah, like as far as what the Seahawks have to do in this game, I think it's pretty simple. They're going to have to be able to run the ball effectively. They're going to have to be able to get to Aaron Rodgers, who is completely immobile, and their left tackle, Broderick Jones, gave up 3 sacks and 5 pressures. And all the conversation in Pittsburgh is, do they bench him? Like, this was a guy that was a right tackle last year. He's now their left tackle. And there's a lot of concern in Pittsburgh that he can't hold up. And one of the guys that had a sneaky good game for the Seahawks was Boye Mafe in this one. Had 5 pressures. I think he led the team in pressures in this game. Had some nice reps against Trent Williams. If I'm the Steelers and I look at what the Seahawks did to the 49ers from a pressure perspective, and then I look at who we got to block them, I'm a little worried. So I think the Seahawks have to be able to get pressure. They have to be able to defend the run and be ready for the quick game. I think they have the guys to do that. But really, it's still going to come back to if they can't run the ball on offense, I don't think there's not going to be a lot of games that they can win. I think they have to be a team that can be effective on the ground.
Yeah, and they do, because their passing game just leaves a lot to be desired. And I think on Sunday, was not shocking, the target distribution. Like anyone who went to Green Bay. Like, I came back from Green Bay thinking Jax is the only guy that got open on a team that's number one corner is Keyshawn Nixon. I did not watch the Lions game that the Packers played. Maybe Keyshawn Nixon is the reincarnation of Darrelle Revis. Maybe if he is, then I am sorry. But at this moment, I believe he's just a guy as a number one corner, and no one else could get open out there in Green Bay but Jax. At least get open with any consistency. Elijah Arroyo had a really good touchdown catch in the joint practice. He was also covered, right? Like, it was just a good play. It wasn't like he barbecued Quay Walker, excuse me. So I really need them to get to that run game, but also use it to open everything else up, like they've been telling us they were going to do. Like, I'm giving them advice. They've been telling us, like, we're going to run, we're going to set up the pass. They've been telling everybody this. They're telling us. They're telling their friends and family. They went on the Jackson went on the pivot with Ryan Clark in Green Bay and told them the same things. That's what type of time we on. Run, then throw. Like, cool. Instead, it was all of this stuff that was like, all right, the first read is Jackson. Jackson's open, throw it. I was like, okay, cool. That's fine. But your other four guys are just out here getting cardio, and that's just not helpful for the rhythm of the offense, you know? So they got to fix that. And I also think at some point, maybe not this game, because TJ Watt's still, you know, a monster. But at some point, I do feel like Sam's just got to trust his training. And I say that in the sense of, like, it feels like Sam is a guy who's held onto the ball too long a lot in his career. That's led to sacks, that's led to interceptions, led to seeing ghosts. And now is almost overcompensating a little bit. It's like, I got to get it out. 1-2, it's out. 1-2, like his reads. 1-2, it's out. 1-2, it's out. It's like, okay, well, gave you $100 million, right? Not $10. Like, you can make some throws, man. Like, and you got good protection. I thought the protection was really good on Sunday against the Niners. Charles Cross is a love that game.
Really good, man. Yeah,
you take that tape right in there in John Schneider's office and say, give me $30 million a year. Another discussion. But yeah, like, the protection was good in that game, and they kind of played like they didn't think it would be. Kind of played like, all right, Sam, 1-2, get it out. Like, come on, man. Like, trust your guys. Don't tell us the O-line's gonna be better all year and then just play like you got Stone Forsythe back there. Right? Don't do that. So yeah, I just think I get why Sam's like that, though, because, again, this is year, like, 8 or something, and he's on his 5th team already, you know, like, just, and that's for a reason. So getting the ball out does have value. Take completions. What QB coaches tell these guys all the time. That's fair, but if you're only taking completions to Jax, that's just not sustainable. You will lose. Teams will take that, and then eventually teams will start allocating resources to making sure that's not even open. They don't force you to throw to Elijah, force you to throw to AJ, force you to throw to Torrey and Cooper. And your timing needs to be there with them too, you know? So they eventually got it. Again, maybe not this game. It would help if it was, but maybe not this game, but eventually they got to get out of that. Like, Sam can throw. He can stand in the pocket and make throws. He can. And if you don't think he can, then why sign him, right? You sign him because you think he can. Take the training wheels off and you'll beat a lot of teams. I do think they have playmakers, but if you're just force feeding Jax and barely running the rock, yeah, you'll start getting blown out. You know, forget losing by, you know, a few points.
Hey, that's a great problem to have, to be surprised by how much protection you have going on in the pocket. So we'll take it. I feel like that can be a win for week one. But the Seahawks are facing a familiar face in DK Metcalf. So what are your guys' expectations for this reunion?
Ooh, you want this one,
I'll
Brian?
Say this. Yeah, I mean, I've seen DK go against these corners in practice, you know, for the last few years. And there were some good battles between Woolen and DK. Generally, DK won those battles in my estimation overall. Like, he was pretty unguardable for a lot of training camps. At the same time, there was a lot of plays that DK Metcalf made in training camp that he did not translate to the field during games. Like, there was contested catches he would make all the time during practice and come the game, like the guy, for whatever reason, similar to Reek, like insane athlete, should be able to high point the ball and beat anybody to it. Not great at playing the ball in the air, you know? So as far as this game goes, I'd expect DK Metcalf to get, you know, to be productive. I don't think they're going to shut him down. I also think DK Metcalf, as much as he knows all these corners, this team knows him and knows he's not a highly varied route runner. There's a few routes that DK wins on, and I think they will know what those are. So yeah, I figure him to actually, you know, absolutely play a meaningful role in this game. I don't think that's not the guy that for me is going to decide whether the Seahawks win or lose.
So who's the guy? Who's the guy, Brian?
Well, if you're looking about on the Steelers side, I think it's going to be offensive line. Like I think that offensive line for the Steelers is really questionable. I don't think the run blocking was very good against the Jets. I thought they, for some reason, kept going to Kenneth Gainwell, and I think Jalen Warren's a way better back, and I'm not a big fan of Gainwell, and he didn't look that great. And then the pass protection was really poor. And so I think if they rebound, the Steelers probably win this game. If they don't, then I think the Seahawks defense could end up putting their offense into some plus field position and completely shut down that Steelers offense. We just saw Brock Purdy run around for his life, make all these plays off script. Aaron Rodgers does not have that in his bag at 41. So if you're getting him off the spot, you're getting him on the ground.
Yeah, I think so. I think they do need to turn their pressures into sacks. You can't just be the pressure kings. Pressure is great, but pressure is not inherently good. You know, pressured Brock Purdy on the pass that ended the game, right? Eventually got out of it. So I think they had a sack rate of like 2.8% or something like that, one of the lower rates in the league in week one, despite either, depending on what chart you're looking at, they were the first in the league in pressure rate or third in the league. I think third would be what True Media has. But either way, turn your pressures into sacks is the gist of that. They do got to get Rodgers on the ground. They got him on the ground last year, so. And he's only a year older. So I imagine they will again. As it pertains to DK, you guys remember when I think Brian tweeted out the video. It was from, I forget whose Instagram, but it's Nick Emanuori, the rookie talent show in Green Bay, making fun of DB coach Carl Scott. And in the impersonation of K Scott, he's talking about how no one else is as good in man coverage as Spoon. He's basically like, if your number's not 21, if your last name not Witherspoon, back up, you know, because you can't press man is the joke that he's referring to. And I don't think they'll have that problem against the Steelers. I think they're going to look at the Steelers tape. They're going to know that they know DK, and they're going to say, everyone's with a spoon this week. Get up there. Don't let these guys catch the ball. Like, get up there, press them up, DK included. I think they will. And I think it'll work, because the reason you do that is what Brian was just alluding to. These guys are trying to get the ball out quick. We'll go press them up. Go press them up. And disrupt the timing on the slants. And if they run a go ball, we got Reek. We got Spoon. Like, we got Job, who did a great job staying on top of the deep stuff the other day. So that, I think, will be the key. Because if Aaron has to hold that thing, like if he has to go 1 to 2 to 3, that it could get bad. Or he's throwing picks like he did. Aaron threw multiple picks, the defensive lineman last year, including Leonard Williams was not the only one. I think he threw one to the Vikings guy. Van Ginkle, I think, picked him off for the house too on a similar blitz. So, like, he's trying to get it out to his own team, you know, find out in the next episode of Dragon Ball Z. But, like, I think that's going to be the key there, is, like, everyone being able to say, hey, coach, we all can strap these boys up today. And he's had games that Mike McDonald has, by the way. The Rams won last year. In Seattle comes to mind. They would play a lot of like, hey, strap up. You got Cup, you got Nacua, you got such and such, roll, let it go. Obviously it backfired in overtime, but that was the plan. I think it'll be the plan on Sunday. And if it works, DK won't have a big game. This will be like a 3 targets for 18 yards type of game, you know, if it goes well.
Well, guys, before we wrap up, I do want to get to one of the super chats that we have here, one or two of them, on regretting not trading for Jalen Ramsey. What do we think?
Now, what does Jalen make? Would he have been the highest paid guy on the team on defense? Yeah, so it would have been either him or Leonard, I think, would have been the highest paid. Yeah, just not doing that. He's not doing it. Yeah, he's just not doing it.
Yeah, and he's playing a nickel position. He's basically doing what Nicky Minwori was drafted to do. I don't think that would have been a role that would have made sense for the Seahawks.
I think we joked last time that I mentioned Jamal Adams jokingly, but legitimately, this is the role. this is it. Did he make the Raiders? He made the Raiders, right? Like he's on their
yeah. He did
roster. Yeah, like this is he's another guy whose body type is unique though for the position. Like it really is a body type thing. Jalen too. Jalen's built similar to Nicky Minwori. It sucks too losing Nick because there's just not that many of these guys who can play that role. But no, they don't regret trading for Jalen. Not at that salary. That salary is the real holdup.
In case you're wondering, Jamal Adams, 25 snaps, had a PFF grade of 90.9, the highest graded Raider in this game, and had a 92.5 pass rush grade, two pressures, and a 76.8 coverage grade. So enjoy that, Seahawks fans.
Oh, man. That's the role, though. Pete's going to know how to use them. And their DCs over there is good. It's not a Vegas show, but yeah.
Hey, you know, I'm out here in Boston and everyone had hope for a potential Patriots win against Pete Carroll and did not go their way. But let's get to one more real quick here. Do you expect bad wide receiver two most of the time?
No, I think if they use more play action, they should be fine. That's the thing. I could have told you that if they're just going to play this drop back game that Jax was going to have 20 targets because he's the only guy getting open that fast. But you look at the play action, longer developing stuff. That's how you can get open. Look at the Niners. The Niners ran like a five second route concept to their fullback. He was wide open down the field because you can do that type of stuff when you scheme it up too. And Juszczyk was wide open.
Let's use our fullbacks. Come on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fullback who's a converted tight end. Yeah. Like he can do that. That stuff. I don't like Robbie Oots like lined out wide like he's gonna run a goal ball. That's silly. But like Juszczyk on that play was like in line, pretending like he was gonna block and ran like a seven cut. I think like they can do that, and anybody can do that. I don't think it has to be wide receivers, but you gotta scheme it up, and that is again literally what they told us they were gonna do for like 4 months. It's very frustrating to see the version of the Grub offense with some wide zone sprinkled in the opener that you only score 13 points in.
Well, are you guys going to Pittsburgh? Are you making the trip?
We'll both be there, I think.
Yep, 6 a.m. flight Saturday morning. I will be there.
I'm a little later, but yeah, I'm flying in Saturday, flying back Monday. So should be an interesting one. I mean, this is huge because the rest of the NFC West won their first game. Good reason to think each of them will win their next game. And the Seahawks aren't favored to win. I don't think they should be favored to win, but this is a game that they could win. And, you know, this, I think when you've got all the new things going on offense, AB and Mike, the defense does have to carry an unreasonable amount of the weight for a little bit of time, like to let the offense kind of figure their way out. And so I don't think it's unreasonable to say like the defense has got to hold this team way down and cause enough turnovers to make it easier on the offense. But we'll see. We'll see. I think if the offense really, really struggles again, there's going to be reason to think this thing could go the wrong direction pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think the game is big up for the offense in terms of like Mike McDonald is a big process guy. Like, is our process good? And you get the players to buy into that, and that gets you through like rocky points in the season because you guys trust your process. You come in Monday morning with the same attitude, whether you won or lost. Correct the mistakes, move on, get treatment, yada yada. That said, losing tests all of that. Like it does. You score 13 points in week one at home. That's already bad. You go to Pittsburgh and lay another offensive egg, no matter how the defense plays, how many guys in Monday are just like, man, is this Clint dude know what he's talking about? You know what I mean? Like, not to say it will happen, but that's how it happens, is losing and underperforming below standard, yada, yada. So I think this is a big win for that. I think they'd be fine if they were to start 0-2, like playoff-wise, particularly with an AFC loss. But yeah, it's big for the other parts, the people parts of the business, if your offense doesn't at least look how it's supposed to look in Pittsburgh, win or lose, to be honest.
will be interesting to see really what the Seahawks offense looks like. And I have to end with the quote that you said, Mike, about it's I don't think it's grub with hair. I don't. I think we will see a different Seahawks offense week two matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that I know everyone in my family would love to see the Seahawks beat the Steelers at any time of the year. All right. So we're all about it. But we'll be back next week with our friend Rob. Hope you're having a safe flight. 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you all for watching this week's Seahawks Collective. I'm Annabelle Hasselbeck. Go Hawks.